Welcome back to episode 195. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Tim, and I've been studying Biden's entrance into, you know, Air Force One to try to help me be a better plane passenger going forward. I don't know if you caught that, but he fell three times in one flight of steps.
And so the third, it was like, he's like a Christ figure now?
Yeah, he was within just a fingernail of starting to move down the steps, and he would have ended up on the runway, which would have been a metaphor, perhaps, for the country in general, I think, at this point. And then just to top off my day, you sent me the Time Magazine's latest cover story. I'm fully who I am, which even the grammar is just, anyway, it's the story of Elliot Page, who is a transgender individual who wants to live his life as a man, I guess. It's hard to tell from the picture, Tim.
Yeah, it's Ellen. It's Ellen Page, the actress, who reportedly transitioned. She now calls herself Elliot Page and identifies as a man. And everyone is now obligated to refer to her as a he. So,
right.
Okay. This is a big story, I guess. That's just, of course, and who was it written by? Who was the name of the person?
Kathy Steinmetz.
Steinmetz? Oh, okay.
Steinmetz, yeah. Social scientist with a lot of dignity and academic background. But anyway, this is, as we mentioned many times, people may think that the world is insane. It isn't. This is propaganda. This is a plan. This is, the clown world is funny, and laughter is, I think, the right response in many moments. But you always have to bear in mind you're dealing with a weapon. This is a designed weapon to break you, to break down your culture. And at this point, it's very malevolent because, when you have something like a well-known woman changing into a man and then getting on the cover of Time magazine, it's distracting against the evil of the vaccine or so-called vaccine that's being rolled out.
Yeah. And obviously, this is just more, confusion they're sowing. Time is at it again, pushing this stuff, this nonsense. It's I guess there was a time when it was really important, that was on the cover of Time magazine, but it is part of the big push that we've talked about. This week we had some interesting developments. Senator Rand Paul actually interrogated Dr. Fauci during a hearing and cornered Dr. Fauci on some points and how, basically his policies that he's advocating is based on pure conjecture about variant viruses, about the maintaining of the mask requirements or guidelines, despite the fact that supposedly 100 million Americans are vaccinated. And Dr. Paul or Senator Paul made the point that if you've had it or you've had the vaccine, you shouldn't have to wear the mask. And Dr. Fauci, of course, is advocating wearing the mask, two masks rather. Of course, after dismissing the idea of wearing the mask last year, he's now, of course, surprise, surprise, contradicted himself. He's done that so many times. But it was an interesting exchange. Now, Senator Paul could have gone deeper into the COVID scam But nevertheless, it was interesting in seeing him kind of corner him on this point, and Dr. Fauci really having no response other than his saying, "I disagree with you," having no science or any studies to justify his support for continued restrictions.
Yeah, which is getting harder and harder to even present as coherent in light of Florida. I mean, Florida is doing just fine and they are completely open. They're, a large state with a huge elderly population, and there just isn't any reason to not use them as your model, particularly given the fact that their economy is going up as opposed to the lockdown states whose economies are all collapsing. So, I was glad that Paul questioned Fauci. I really found the line of questioning troubling. I thought that, as I'm suspicious of Paul. He seems to me like the opposition leader that the oligarchs have selected. I just think he could do more precise and, kind of energized questioning of Fauci when he has him, and I don't think he should kind of accept a lot of the premises. This week was also interesting in that Trump advocated taking the
Yeah,
vaccine.
yeah.
You
He
know, so
he.
this sort of, I think, will clarify Trump, hopefully, to people who are sort of on the edge of the QAnon, version of reality. You can see that Trump is far more likely to be a lifetime actor. Someone who was actually selected just to, give the impression that democracy meant something. His hair really isn't blonde. Look at his high school pictures. He's a fake person. Now he's trying to help people to get, to believe in the vaccine. And I think that this is going to be necessary because I think that the low-hanging fruit has been picked. And I think going forward, you're going to find it's going to be tougher and tougher to get anyone to take it. We'll see about that, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, you don't see it as we shouldn't look at it as a partisan issue. Although I think those on the right are probably more skeptical or hesitant than those on the left. But careful, because I don't think there's anyone among the political class who's openly calling out the vaccine, the so-called vaccine, for the fraud that it is and the danger that it potentially presents to humanity. So this is something that's happening either above or below the political level, and there were, that's where you're getting so much resistance, because the political class and the establishment not only support the vaccine regime in general, they're supporting this experimental gene therapy concoction or drug that is, of course, being falsely and fraudulently marketed to the public as a vaccine, and that's just the basic science there. But again, you could do a lot more with Dr. Fauci. It's nice to, I think, in the eyes of the public, he's kind of, people getting tired of him, but the press, the mainstream press, still seems to try to maintain his reputation. He Fauci has had his critics, and he's just, it was the inventor of the PCR test, Kerry Mulis, had some very interesting to say about Fauci. He won the 1993 Nobel Peace Prize for inventing the polymerase chain reaction test, PCR test. That was, of course, been used to diagnose coronavirus cases, even though the label on the test says not to do that, any such thing. I think it's used for clinical laboratory reasons, not for purposes of diagnosis. And he Mulis also admitted in some interviews that the PCR test doesn't tell you that you're sick. Of course, Dr. Fauci has served as the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the director of it, of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, since 1984. So he's been a long time, I guess, fixture at that bureaucracy. And he's sort of a political bureaucrat, not so much a doctor or even a researcher. That's what Kerry Mulis said about him. Kerry Mulis died, I think, 2019. But Kerry Mulis stated in an interview, so that guys like Fauci get up there and they start talking, He doesn't know anything really about anything. And I'd say this to his face, nothing. The man thinks you can take a blood sample and stick it in an electron microscope, and if it's got a virus in there, you'll know it. He doesn't understand electron microscopy, microscopy or microscopy, I guess how you pronounce that. And he doesn't understand medicine, and he should not be in a position like he's in. Most of those guys up there on the top are just total administrative people, and they don't know anything about what's going on in the body. You know, those guys have got an agenda, which is not what we would like them to have, being that we pay them to take care of our health in some way. They've got a personal kind of agenda. They make up their own rules as they go. They change them when they want to, and they smugly, like Tony Fauci, sorry, they change, you know, and they smugly, like Tony Fauci, does not mind going on television in front of the people who pay his salary and lie directly into the camera, Carrie Mullis said. So I guess he got the measure of Fauci, I think, pretty accurate there.
Yeah, I almost was able to meet Karen Mullis once, but didn't, and it was a huge disappointment because I really liked him. I thought he was a clear-minded individual. I wonder about his death. I think it's quite mysterious, and particularly now, given the role that the 40-cycle PCR test has played in this
Yeah.
pseudo epidemic. You'd wonder if had he been alive, if he could have been leading a more energized rebellion against it. There was an interview this week on a podcast show called The Conscious Resistance that's run by Derek Broze. And I thought it was absolutely excellent. It was an exchange between Broze and Andrew Kaufman and Dr. Thomas Cowan on the subject of whether or not the COVID 19 virus has been isolated. And anyone who listens to us, whoever has a problem defending the position against someone claiming that COVID has been isolated, it's a real thing. I mean, in one article currently, they say that it's been isolated over 100,000 times. Right? Well, listen to the interview and specifically to Cowan's step by step. I mean, he goes through it just very, very clearly, one step at a time, so that you can see that what they claim is isolation is just a trick on words, that there is no thing that they have ever been able to produce. There's no real thing. It is a 100% computer construct that comes out of the process that they use, which is why there is no virus, isolate, as they call it, that research labs can ask for to be, like have sent to them from the CDC. There is no real thing that they're able to produce with their process. And if you listen to Cohen's explanation, you'll also have the ability to go through the process that produces something that is real, the way you can actually isolate, the way that bacteria and was isolated to prove that it existed before because you had this political situation. But it's also quite interesting. They got into the discussion about, well, are viruses real at all? Because this method that COVID has been isolated fraudulently with, in my opinion, is really all they have for the existence of virus to prove the existence of viruses at all. Now, this is such a far leap because people have been trained in the existence of viruses since they were kids. It's impossible to disprove, right? This that well, they you know that I can show you they don't exist. But boy, when you listen to Cowan and Kaufman talk about it, you can see how it is very possible. It is not far-fetched that there are no such things as living viruses. And that if that is the case, I would say, like the success of vaccines, that the virus has just been a concept that has been developed by the oligarchs, so they would have this ability to have something which is completely unseeable and unknowable, untouchable, that they could conjure up whenever they wanted to control population.
Yeah, it gives them a pretext, an excuse to literally invade your body. the whole idea of
Yeah.
mass inoculation. Of course, the history of vaccines is much different than most people are led to believe. And it does. It's paradigm shifting or shattering, and that's why most people, it's not the question; it's the conclusion that you get from asking the question, which most
Yeah, well,
people, I
it's
think, shy away
like
from. Yeah.
the rejection of the germ theory,
Yeah.
which you were the one who explained it to me. And honestly, I was, befuddled, but when I, it took me a while to get my head around it. So it is disorienting, but there it is. It's quite possible.
Yeah. And of course, obviously, if you go, if you start to deconstruct or challenge the germ theory or the nature of viruses, is it really a pathogen? Obviously, Tony Fauci at the National Institute of Infectious Disease and Allergy, department isn't going to admit that that his entire mission, his career, is a fraud. There's a lot of money at stake, so. Billions of
Yeah.
dollars, tens of billions of dollars of research, and also the power that the opportunity to exercise power, because it's the basis for the medical dictatorship that the oligarchs have established.
Yeah, there's a woman that I really like. Her name is Astrid Stuckelberger. She is a former, perhaps even she still is a doctor who works for WHO in public health, and she's been on the air this last week trying to sound the alarm about really malevolent kind of structures inside of WHO, particularly those around Bill Gates. And she goes in the interview that's available now. If you just type in Astrid Stuckelberger, I'm sure you'll be able to see it. And one thing that she goes into is how she actually got into an argument with Bruce Plotkin, who is Bill Gates's lawyer controller over WHO, and he was telling her what she could teach and what she couldn't teach in terms of public health. So this is an amazing disclosure, and it shows that Gates, because this was, I think, before the COVID pandemic, the fact that Plotkin was an agent for Gates trying to actually control what could be taught in terms of what public health and how the public should relate to the bureaucracy, things like this. In other words, things that would make them more effective, a more effective democratic force in a situation like the one we're now experiencing. But Plotkin was there, a couple of years ago, controlling the pedagogy of what WHO's, instructors are putting out.
Again, you can't just put blind trust or blind faith in these agencies despite their stated mission. Whether it's the CDC, I mean, I think at this point these institutions have lost so much credibility, at least in the eyes of the thinking public. I just saw recommendations from the CDC saying that people should wear masks when they're working out at the gym, even while they're working out, doing strenuous workout, and that when they're drinking water, they should put a straw underneath their mask. It's like, no one's going to do that. They shouldn't do it. It's obviously it's stupid advice. Just that way, staying inside and isolating yourself last year was stupid. Obviously, so just the fact that these supposed public health officials and experts are giving you obviously advice that is obviously against your good health means that they should have they shouldn't give them any credibility to any of these questions. They're obviously either they're incompetent or malevolent or both, and either way they shouldn't be given any authority or any position to direct the lives of people. It's at this point
Yeah,
it's
well,
self-evident.
yeah, absolutely. Well, think of like an elementary school that the children walk 6 feet apart
Yeah.
with masks on, and then compare that to how, say, slaves would have been treated, getting off the boat before the auction.
Yeah.
I mean, this is slave training that is going on. The people, who are trying to argue with the medical bureaucracy the government has installed on the nature of the science for mask wearing are wasting their time. This is the bureaucrat who is enforcing this is not representing any kind of legitimate science. That is just the distraction for what the person is actually trying to do, which is to slave train so that you get used to walking 6 feet apart in a straight in a line with other people. I mean, when you go into Trader Joe's and you have to, you know, be 6 feet apart with your mask on and then go all down the aisle at one in the same direction. This isn't science. What is this? It is, you're a collection of people who are transitioning from believing you are free people to being controlled as slaves. There's nothing else that's going on there.
Yeah, the forced compliance, complying to obviously stupid, you know, unhealthy rules. And you know, that itself is reason enough to not to have them. But, I mean, they'll pose the question like the mask. Does the mask help prevent infection? You know, well, theoretically, it is a barrier, and I guess it does afford some protection from infection. But the question is it good for you? That's the question from a health matter. It's like, does it prevent breathing? Is it an attraction for bacteria in these things? What's the practical effect of wearing these things? People are going to reuse them. If indeed they do catch infection, how will they dispose? There was no instruction how you dispose these things. You walk in your parking lot, you see them blowing around with the wind because people just toss them or people reuse them. So you're asking the wrong question. It's not a question whether or not it prevents the spread or can prevent the spread. Theoretically, can, because any barrier, my hand can do that. But it's question, is it good for you? That's the question. And, you know, all things considered, obviously it isn't. And not to mention, like you said, the psychological effect. Imagine a six-year-old kid who's grown up this entire year, people wearing masks. It's a huge chunk of his life where he just observed people wearing masks. It's obviously it's a malevolent. And it's counterproductive from a public health standpoint. But public health has always been a pretext for social control, which is what we're seeing. You know,
that is so well said. I'm dazzled. I'm going to use it. I'm going to steal all of. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, it's what a great way of expressing it. The question is not whether or not there is some kind of science indicate if you put a cloth over your face. I mean, you'd probably bind your face in saran wrap and you would definitely stop, you know, all of the infections and spreading. Now you'd suffocate to death in a few minutes. But the question
But it would prevent the spread.
And this is a bigger question. It has to do with freedom. It has to do with economic activity being accelerated. It has to do with fresh air and oxygen to the brain. It has to do with not having a fomite over your face all the time. You know?
It's just an obvious question. The fact that public health.
Picture. Yeah, that's right. That's the thing. That is a. I could have used you this afternoon. I told you I was tossed out of Costco. Anyway, that. I mean, doesn't really. You know, just arguing with them on the idea of the science is such a waste. But the Costco bureaucrat at that level, these people are all just afraid of losing their jobs. You can see that there is a humanity. You can see it in their eyes. They don't really want to be doing this, but they also don't want to get fired. And this is just this process that they've succumbed to.
Just like I told you, I was wearing that fake office fake mask, sort of lampooning the whole idea of wearing a mask because my face is. Clearly, at the store, and the clerk who's first wearing a mask says, "I love your mask." she knew it was completely fake, you know. So that's where we are. But there's interesting developments here, other developments. Governor DeSantis of Florida slams critical race theory. It says it will have no place in Florida classrooms. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis slammed critical race theory and pledged there is no room in the state's classroom for the controversial curriculum. Of course, critical race theory is an academic movement made up of civil rights scholars and activists in the United States who seek to critically examine the law as it intersects with issues of race and to challenge mainstream liberal approaches to racial justice. Critical race theory examines social and cultural issues as they relate to race, laws, social, and political power. So basically, it's hating whitey, That's what it
Yeah, I
is.
mean, it's not really much of an improvement over the culture of critique that existed in the 70s. I mean, it's 100% cultural Marxism right out of the Frankfurt School. There's nothing unusual or novel about, critical race theory. People who are in opposition to it, they should look back through the last 50 years of academia,
Well, they can't. That's another thing,
rip
is
the
that
whole thing out,
that's why this effort. This is similar to President Trump's efforts last year regarding the 1619 Project. Is that you're criticizing critical race theory, but not going after, what spawned it and who's behind it. Ron DeSantis is a proud Zionist, and he's not going after sort of the Jewish groups that have promoted this. Same with the 1619 Project is it's being promoted for a reason, and why is it, and who's doing it? Like New York Times promoting the 1619 Project. Well, who runs the New York Times? And of course, critical race that I think grew out of critical legal theory, which grew out of culture critique. So it's, this
Well, I mean,
our same
Tim,
friends.
critical race theory is a great idea. How about this as a curriculum item? We want to criticize the Jews for destroying the Gentiles with their different culture of critiques, that this is a racial attack. There's critical race. I mean, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. Why can't they just look at the treatment of the Palestinians? It's somehow they're able to, and this is not a blanket idea of the Jews. It's that is the secret society, Judaic Masonic cult. It's just very specific individuals who control academia, among other things, and they are able to create this idea of critical race, wherein Europeans and European culture goes under a microscope, and the microscope has only one color that it looks through, and that is critical, hateful, hate it. Everything about it is bad. It just looks at this culture, and it's all bad. But this is not an attempt at understanding history or of trying to find out what is real. This is the imposition of propaganda. That's all it is. So when you get to, debating whether or not critical race should even be, like something that is in academia, it doesn't even need to be discussed. What needs to be discussed is the question of what sort of propaganda tools are in play inside of our cultural environment.
Yeah, especially the
What are
schools where you
Yes.
have young people who haven't even developed a
And
background
let's
in their
look at
own
these things
literature,
as
history, these things. How can they even contemplate, even confronted with these things before they have a firm basis?
Before you get there, have the discussion of whether or not it is a designed cultural weapon and who created it and for what purpose. Have that discussion. If you are really fair and open-minded and wanting to open up this concept of critical race, start out with that concept before you get into, the Europeans created slavery and things like this. Before you get into this propaganda aspect, go through the process. Who created these ideas? Who was the Frankfurt School? Where did these ideas come from? Just step through it so you can actually see, is it a weapon? Is it just sophistry? Is this just a critical, excuse me, a clever idea, a clever use of psychology, essentially, to manipulate people into losing self-esteem, into having an idea of history that renders them impotent, and not for the purpose of making a brave new world. That is the distraction. It's for the purpose of creating a slave state, which is what we're heading into right now.
There was a Chris, right now there's the news, there's a report, or there was this report of a shooting at some massage parlors in Georgia, where a young man went in, I think killed eight people reportedly, five of whom were Asian. I guess three were non-Asian, but now it's being spun in the media as if some sort of anti-Asian attack. I guess the three non-Asians don't count for much, at least. But now it's almost as if you have this discussion in the media where it's just assumed that it was the motivations were anti-Asian, And we now we have to have a discussion, a national discussion about racist attacks against Asians. Now, presumably, guess what? Are they blaming white people for this? Because this assailant is white. When, at least from my understanding, is a lot of the most of the violence that Asians suffer are at the hands of black men, not whites. So I don't know where they're trying to go with this, but it's strange that they're trying to stir up some sort of I guess controversy regarding Asians and race at this time. But yeah, it seems that his motivations had nothing to do with these massage parlors. Of course, weren't strictly a massage parlors, from what I understand. It was a more or less a bordello, and this man apparently had some sort of sexual addiction or issues, and so who knows what his motivations were. But they were just assumed that they were racial because five of his eight victims were Asian. When there's, from what I understand, I don't see anything that reports any factual basis for that suspicion, other than that the media is just trying to stir up another controversy and create more racial division.
Yeah, I think this one won't have legs because I actually saw, I don't know if you caught the follow-up, but there was a story about how they had Asian, businessmen were arming themselves now after the event. Did you read that?
I didn't catch
They were,
that, but
so they're trying to, create a movement with pseudo media. However, I
but
know a
when you
few
have a
Asians.
massacre at a what is really a bordello, from what I understand, you can call
Right.
the massage parlors, ha ha, wink wink. It doesn't really, it isn't as if like the every Asian's being targeted or Asian-owned businesses. It's there's something specific to this business and what the business, the service the business provided, that may have contributed to what occurred, as opposed to just because you want a dry cleaner.
Yeah,
Or
of
you have a
course.
law firm, or
Oh,
or a tree,
exactly.
a construction company, and you're Asian owned, doesn't mean you're now you're at a threat. Nor is there, it's almost as like the white supremacy thing, where they're trying to almost out of thin air contrive this problem, as if white people are targeting Asian people, and they contribute to like the Wuhan flu thing, but there's nothing really there. It's just a media creation.
Just look, if this guy really hated Asians, he would have massacred the USC Dental School.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just ridiculous, and the media is simply they're trying to do whatever they can to shatter the psychology of the white male specifically, but to create this racial fervor. Which kind of plays into the Antifa
Yeah.
counterculture, just the destruction of the middle class. I mean, this is really what the idea is. It's just the destruction of the white middle class, of breeding it out of existence, and then of course just physically, moving it all over the place so it can't really organize in any way, like with the breaking up of the ethnic enclaves. I don't know if you saw that study that came out this week, wherein scientists had determined that American European male sperm was down 60%. And she determined that at the current trajectory, the sperm count in 2045 would be zero, which doesn't give you much of a future, does it? In the paper, there was also the identification of, I believe it was six or eight new chemicals, which were all carcinogenic, highly toxic, and they have found their way into the American body, physical body at this point. And of course, all of these toxins en masse are moving us, to a kind of a semi-human, and then of course to a status of non-existence. So the little tagline to that dreary data story is that you've got to be aware of the attack against your body. I mean, the attack against your mind is going on with the Time magazine. cover where you get to see the the new, what is this, Page, but Elliot Page, I believe his new name. So this attacks your sense of reality, the kind of intellectual balance that we would have as a human, and, particularly, which is typically grounded in, this binary sexual situation. But that's gone, and now you have this fluidity. But I think even worse, or as bad as the psychic toxicity is the physical toxicity. I mean, 60% reduction in sperm count. Of course, this isn't going to be headline news at this point, because people might wonder about the, if I'm headed toward oblivion, maybe I don't want a, a toxic vaccine in my body at the moment, so that you probably won't hear anything about it. But clear-minded people who are aware of it should take steps, start with water. I haven't, just as a, example, I mean, it's been 15 years since I've had any water in me that wasn't, put through a ceramic filter that gets it all, everything bad out of it, and leaves in the minerals, that are necessary for life. And of course, if you can, just don't eat any food at all that isn't 100% organic.
Yeah, and the article alerted. Yeah, I did read the article. It's a lot of these chemicals called forever chemicals.
Yeah,
just because in the food packaging, plastics, the soaps, these things, the toiletries that people use, lotions, they've loaded down with these chemicals. I don't know why, but nevertheless, they've done it. And this is, again, this has had a apparently a deleterious effect on the fertility. Again, this isn't getting much attention. But apparently we're supposed to be worried about a flu virus, that has a 99.97 survival rate, that may or may not exist. So again,
Sperm count down 60%. Well, that's not even a story. COVID is a horror story that never stops with a survival rate of 99.74 if you don't live in a retirement home.
Yeah. And then, of course, they're just creating confusion and enmity between the sexes constantly. Again, it's like, what matters, you have Mario Cuomo and his problems, or sorry, Andrew Cuomo. Mario Cuomo is his father, but apparently it's his sexual harassment, his penchant for asking girls out on dates that are under his, I guess, his subordinates, that are the reasons why he should be kicked out of office, but not the thousands of people that he killed, and the economy that he destroyed, So, it's again, toxic masculinity, and what they can't destroy culturally or psychologically, they appear to be doing it chemically.
Yeah, well, I hate to be too graphic in the details, but I would think, if I was like, a young man, 25, 35, and wanted to get kind of the information dump as to where my body is, I would get the sperm count first thing. Mm-hmm. It's not expensive. And then just take it from there. And it'll head you in a good direction. If you can keep getting that up and keep getting toxicity down, you're just going to be more clear-minded, more energized, more of your real self. I mean, because clearly, when you've lost 60%, the numerical percent of the sperm, the other 40% are not in great shape, it would assume. And the whole being is suffering. It isn't just this one aspect of your biology that has been attacked. It's your whole body. So everything is diminished. Your inflammation is up. Your emotions are crap. They're not going to be as powerful as they should be, as clear-minded, as energizing, as defensive, So, people wonder how to rebel. Well, the first thing is rebel right inside your body. Don't let yourself become a victim of their destruction. Find a way to get yourself strong and healthy and clear-minded. It'll be amazing, I think, what will happen to you when not just, your sort of intellectual understanding of the world gives you the idea of how to rebel, but But you have a little bit of anger, a little bit of emotion, a little bit of rage and passion, you know. So, you know, these things can, and it's like I think people just aren't aware because it happens so slowly, you know, over time as the toxicity sets in. People just don't appreciate how debilitated they are. That's why one of the things I recommend, I know, I mean, I'm not sure if it's appropriate topic, but I always say just get a sperm count. What is it? You know, because if it's really low, then you know what you have to do. You need to start working on changing your diet dramatically and changing, you know, just completely the nature of the toxicity that's getting into you.
Yeah, I'd stay away from Bill Gates's Impossible Burgers. And that way you won't be relegated to going to one of Bill Gates's fertility clinics in the future and getting his permission if you want a child, which is what they want, a system.
Yeah, of
They
course.
will they'll destroy natural fertility and then they'll make money on fertility clinics. That'd be the business model, and that's it's much easier to control the population that way. Effectively, you have to get a
Yeah, I mean
license to have a kid,
they'll sell you the sperm, and then they'll also give you the pedagogy to raise a child with. So I think you really have a real wholesome American, life going forward here with this project.
Yes, you'll get Jeffrey Epstein's sperm that they saved or something. I don't know.
And he wanted Jeffrey Epstein. He wanted to be like, Genghis Khan and to have like thousands of children, So this is, I mean, defeat Jeffrey Epstein, have a real baby, have your own child.
Well, this might lead into our main topic. We're talking about Bio-Leninism, and of course, creating a generation of physical weak misfits. That always helpful. That's helpful for the oligarchs. Bio-Leninism is an interesting concept. It takes basic Leninist strategy or modeling for by build from building a party to rule the state. By empowering, well, the dregs of society against, against the middle class. The idea, I think, the basic idea is that those with zero status in a normal society will have very little power. So if you have a political, I guess, establishment or ruling elite that will make a deal with them, and I guess you could say, by granting them a certain amount of power, that group will be much more loyal to the party. And so if that party should ever lose power, they will lose all status and power. So they'll become, I guess, soldiers, for the party. And it's funny because you see it kind of being played out today. Basically, Bio-Leninism is a system which the global homo powers ensure that the most problematic of society are targeted. And of course, the problematic are the healthy heterosexual, I guess, men who can't are in a position to fight back and defend their rights. And so it's been described as was it the top and the middle sorry the top and the bottom waging war on the middle, you can say the middle class. And if you look at recent developments or this in the past 30 40 50 years, we kind of see that strategy being implemented in the West. I mean, I think the Wait, so what, I mean, that's kind of what we see now with, with Black Lives Matter, Antifa, the promotion of transgenderism, the kind of this creation of sexual minorities, whether it's transgenderism, homosexuals, is this war against the healthy middle to weaken society and atomize it and make it more, I guess, easier to rule over, to govern, to control.
Yeah, it's an amazing idea. I think it comes like around the 50s, I believe, right? I mean, I would know because I've read some Foucault, And he basically talks about, I think he uses the term, I'm pretty sure. But the idea is that it takes the idea of like rich and poor, the Marxist concept, you know, that dialectic. And he says, really, you want to have a conflict between the rich and the ugly. I mean, this is literally how it describes itself. Is you it, in other words, it's the poor are can as in that term, with that word, can be very righteous. You know, they can be very sort of morally upright. Like in California, we have like impoverished Latino families that are much more moral than, like Satanist Hollywood kind of groups. So this isn't going to get anywhere trying to organize the poor in that regard because they have a moral background. And so the idea was to organize the ugly. This is Foucault, where you would get, a drug addict, tattooed, transgender. I mean, the more perverse, the better from this position, because they're trying to set up that group as a terrifying, culture-destroying organization. And, if you look at, like Black Lives Matter, well, like the mission statement, it kind of gets into this a little bit. But then when you go Black Lives Matter, I think it's sort of a spectrum or a bell curve where you have the more wholesome aspect of it, and then it kind of at the high point it starts to move into Antifa, and then at the end of that you get tattooed, fentanyl brigade, mentally ill, like drug addicts, so that would be the Bio-Lenin fodder. That group would be, and which is why it's interesting that they harvested them, the Open Society program when they organized the riots. After Lloyd George, they organized these riots, and the first ones, it was pretty much BLM, there was some ugliness, but then when you got into like Seattle and Portland, these places, you really had the fentanyl brigade show up. You could see they're organizing them, and so this is an important term because I do think that's actually the structure of the attack, and it fits really in. I mean, it fits really well into the clown world. You know what I mean? Because they are like horrific clowns, when you look at them, and yet they are now being given status and power, and it's so disorienting, the idea that this group could become ruling a city. But that, I think, is sort of what that's the impression that they're giving the middle class. And of course, when they see that, the first impulse is to flee. Just to get the hell out, because if it was a classic Marxist poor, you could negotiate. There would be these economic issues, and you'd be dealing human to human, so to speak. But when you're dealing with the Bio-Leninist collection, which is what the people are now, they can't be negotiated with. They are literally their political power stems from the fact that they are subhuman. And that they, of course, are artificially put into place. They could never organize themselves by themselves. But when they have like open society money, and of course BLM, which is very complicit in their, in organizing them and using them. I mean, BLM has been given $1.6 billion by corporations, I read. $1.6 billion. Does the, Better Business Bureau and the Elks get budgets like that from the corporations,
Is the IRS auditing this? Where the money's going? Yeah, I mean, this is an obvious example of the middle being w attacked by the bottom and the top. The idea that they'd fund an organization like that just to create mayhem. And to stir up violence or foment a civil war at what it's why would they be rewarded with that type of I mean that's a war chest they've been given. So why is that? But you see, the age of the cult of the ugly, the misfit being promoted everywhere, whether it's Elliot Page on the cover of Time magazine, transgenderism, drag queen story. I just recently, there was a judge, I think a transgender judge, he was arrested for child abuse and pornography, because he and his partner were caught, I think, abusing the child they adopted, and also traffic and child pornography. Surprise, surprise. It's an interesting strategy, because it's how you destroy a stable middle class society. And obviously, a motley crew of misfits won't have the organization or the power to do that. But if they're funded and organized from the top, yes, they will, because there are foot soldiers for the elite that are trying to, I guess, destroy the middle class, destroy the family. And once you do that, of course, you destroy the family. You create a larger cohort to people that you can then use as a weapon, a demographic weapon, to wage bio war, as Foucault would say, against the normal and the healthy,
Yeah, and one thing that they clearly do is they drive out the middle class. When you get a series of riots with the bio-Leninist horde, this creates the clear impression that to businessmen, to middle class homeowners, to people with families in this area, that we've got to leave. It creates flight because, again, if it was poor people, this could be something that could be negotiated. I mean, the middle classes, I think, has always been open to discussion with the poor in terms of how they can better themselves, how to create real economic.
Well, this was something that the Marxists discovered in the 20th century, to their frustration in the West, and this is part of the reason why you had cultural Marxism. I think bio-Leninism is a natural strategy born out of cultural Marxism, but they found that the poor in the West, in the 20th century, they were receiving higher wages, and their living standards were improving, that you couldn't radicalize them. So they needed a different strategy. So what you do is you find another group with seething resentment, and this would be these misfits, the miscreants, and at the same time, through cultural warfare, you're able to create a larger and larger cohort, because you've smashed the family or damaged the family, you've polluted the culture, the toxic culture, you've promoted degeneracy. And so it's you're able to produce the foot soldiers you need to wage this war, because you control the higher cultural ground, and what you can wage culture war to create the foot soldiers. And that's what you see with cultural Marxism, that you see in Hollywood, that's been done in the West for the past 50, 60 years. I think it's suggested, like in things like the works of Herbert Marcuse and The Authoritarian Personality.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a straight line of psychological manipulation. And it has it just as you say, it's because the poor couldn't be organized. They still had a moral and in many cases an ethnic backbone, and they just wouldn't succumb to Marxist idiocy. So they have created the bio-Leninist horde. In other words, if you look at the people who are really the degenerate front line of Antifa, you'll see that many of them are, truly mentally ill street people, drug addicts. But think going back like 30, 40 years, how the origins of that street culture. I mean, think about, for example, Shaft, and the blaxploitation films, the CIA agent Gordon Parks creating these culturally and morally degenerate video concepts, which were, part of many other things that led to the idea of the the pimp and hoe and blow culture, but that horde then the if you look at the violence and the education level of these people in the inner city, African American young men, who are suffering from this cultural destruction. they are automatic foot soldiers, you know, into the violinist concept, because they can't possibly, from the physical and intellectual position they're in, have a future. They have to, they are the, you know, if you just think about how, you know, the poor resisted the workers' paradise, but the violinists were, Tim, no, I don't think they can resist. They're, if you, someone comes and say, look, you know, we got to get rid of these fascists, you'll be able to have a, you know, a workers' paradise, the drugs, the power, political power, you'll be king. They can't resist. They will come right in. And so you can see that the process was organized. It was long-term. It was generational. And it led to where we are today, where you can actually get in the streets 1,000 people who are subhuman, you know, who will do the bidding of, you know, the cultural Marxist controllers.
Yeah, and within that mob, it's hard to differentiate and individualize from the mob, because the mob almost acts like an organism of itself. But within that mob are individuals whose lives are full of chaos and disorder, moral disorder. And each of those stories are a tragedy. But that's how you create a mob like that. I mean, people will say, like, there'd be some horrible crime committed by a couple black guys against a white victim. And everyone says, why don't the white people riot? You know, well, because they don't have the same pathologies. They may have different ones, but it's different. In the black community, it's been so it's been so destroyed the past 50, 60 years with, you know, with illegitimacy and family breakup and crime and you know, the crime that it produces, that it is a lumpen proletariat that's easily aroused, and they know that. And of course, then the crowd itself knows what it can get away with, you know, depending on how the police respond. There's a horrible story coming out of Rochester, New York, where a 53-year-old mentally, I think, handicapped man was burned to death by a 14 and a 16-year-old two black youths, and they just did it. They didn't rob them; they just did it to torture them. They're 14 and 16 years old. What do you do with people like? What do you do with assailants like? You know, someone like,
yeah, think of the process that led them to that.
To that, yeah.
Act. You know, yeah. Think of how controlled they have been, how their culture has been controlled, and that this isn't an accident. You know, it's not a moment in response to racism. They have literally been over through the generations brought to this moment where they are debased enough and have been given enough momentum, you know, to think it's okay to do, and to have no human empathy whatsoever for, you know, this old white guy, right? This was something that was fun. And so now, when confronted with this, with the bio-Leninist horde and with these aspects of behavior, the white people who can leave, they flee.
Yeah.
That's what they always do. They can't negotiate with this. How are you going to negotiate with the culture that produced these children?
Or have they,
it's
not possible. And nor can you practically deal with the root causes or even contemplate them, because you just want to get the hell out of there because you don't want to deal with the crime. You don't want to be burned
so
to
they
death.
Run away. And you know, it's a shame, isn't it? Because really what they should do is they should stop and say, how did this happen? Who was really responsible? It's a tough analytic process. I mean, you know, we've had hundreds of hours of discussion about this, but I think a normal person could actually get to a good point of understanding about what is in back of this. You know, you could see who is involved in this. You could understand who the Open Society program is, who Soros is. You could understand how the current, you know, energy to move this into this group into a destructive mode. You could certainly see that.
But who's dumbing them down with critical race theory and 1619 Project, not giving them solid education? Who's promoting the degeneracy, you know, sexual liberation that produces the broken families? You know, who's shipping in the drugs?
Who's running Hollywood?
Yeah.
I mean, Hollywood is completely complicit in this. It's almost, you know, the prime driver. So,
well, hip hop culture,
not hard
right?
For people to understand, but they don't do this. They just flee. instead of stopping, holding their ground, and going, you know, this is a terrible thing. We don't ever want it to happen again, but we've got to find out who is creating these monsters.
Well,
and why are they doing it?
I mean, something like the entertainment. I can't think of anything more damaging to the psyche of the average person than hip hop music and the culture it promotes or produces. I mean, it's everywhere now. It's even enjoyed by white kids. But I mean, just the messaging in it and the impact it has on the psyche of the person. I mean, what do they call white people, wiggers, who listen to this stuff? But what does it do? And it just, I mean, obviously, it celebrates black thuggery, the body, the posture. You know, obviously, it's corrupted. It's it's a totally alien subculture to the middle class identity. But it's heavily promoted, and what's done to the blacks? Just recently, I think the Song of the Year was a song by, it's called Wet Ass Pussy by Cardi B.
Yeah.
Song of the Year. Now, I was thinking back, and let's go back 50 years. Song of the Year was, I think it was Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel. You know, a little different. But if you listen to the word, I mean, you read the words.
And it was, they had a video. Well, it was on television, it was on the MTV, I believe, awards, and which was watched by, young people.
Yeah.
And, this is bio-Leninism at its finest. You know, it's completely degenerate. It's promoted. There's no, it seems like, well, we can't even stop it from being in the airways. But at the same time, we can find a way to get rid of Dr. Seuss.
Yes.
So there does seem to be, it's sort of like the Biden presidency. You know, Tim, it is a clown world. The events that are going on are absurd, right? I mean, to use an expression, they are designed in that way. They aren't meant to be real. The MTV degenerate award show, the censoring of Dr. Seuss from, public sale, taking it out of libraries, these cultural treasures, because it didn't measure up to critical race theory. Look, going forward, we are going to be in this world. They have control over the media. They have control over the politics. This is the world we live in, And so we have to resist the propaganda with skepticism and with community, trying to find other things to do with our time with one another than watch, the MTV Awards. You can see, of course, why this social distancing and the suspension of the constitutional right of assembly have been put into place, because this is a critical time for us to be able to get together and talk, particularly among us, the Europeans, who are the primary target of all of this. We need to organize. We need to exchange information to protect ourselves and to clear up our thinking so we know exactly what's being done and can come up with a plan to defend ourselves. This is the world, and we have to change this world. This world is not a world we can survive in. We can't.
This website called The Root had an article. It's called one guy named Damian Young wrote an article saying that you have to called whiteness a pandemic. And you have to get rid of it. Now, what is one supposed to take from that when someone?
It's either someone who's part of the project, or more likely it's a mentally ill individual. By that, I mean someone whose soul has just been sucked out by and has succumbed basically and become a creature of the oligarchs.
Well, this is the type of person that you'd expect. I believe he is black, the type of person you'd expect who studied critical race theory.
Sure.
I mean, that's the type of mindset they want to produce. I mean, it's ignorant. It has obviously has no clear understanding of history or philosophy. It's all very narrow. It's always solipsistic and self-absorbed. There's no depth to it. But what he's suggesting, is something. It's genocidal, and it's tolerated.
Yeah, and the problem, the basic problem that this guy has, and I'm saying he's probably a black intellectual, is that he doesn't understand history. He has bought into a narrative, to use an expression, that's false, and that is how he is judging the world. He has this idea of that whiteness is what created slavery, which was what created a distressed economic situation for my ancestors, which is why my people are poorer and less politically powerful in the world than these white people who were there through this evil activity. He just doesn't get the
Well, yeah, white
nuance. And
people are
then,
so racist that they allow Asians to become wealthier than they are in this country.
yeah, all of them. But anyway, the point is that if you don't delineate the groups and the motivation and the racial tension between them and how the different groups are responding, you don't understand the world at all. This guy is as lost as a newborn, and I mean just doesn't have a clue. You've got to get in and do the research to understand our history,
He's shadow
understand the
boxing.
conflict.
He's shadow boxing
Yeah.
the whole time, and then you never address the real issue or the real power behind the real forces behind. Just like when you criticize Critical Race Theory 1619 Project, and you don't address the Jewish influence behind it, these powerful Jewish organizations that are promoting it, you're not going to be able to really combat it because again, you're
Yeah,
not dealing
and
with it.
Freemasonry. I mean, you got to understand those two things. The Freemasonry, the hidden, hand that is inside the political world and the financial world, and then the powerful Jewish families that work with Freemasonry and are able to organize things like World War II and World War I, in which white people are slaughtered, right? And yet, that phenomena is not an element in the equation that this guy is looking at the world with. Somehow the like 300 million Europeans who were slaughtered in the 20th century isn't, I mean, that was a century of white privilege.
Yeah, but then, but
Was
yet the UN now is declaring white supremacy to be a global threat.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, you can ask the Palestinians about that. So this is the thing, is that the term whiteness is a distraction. It doesn't get you to the power, and it doesn't get you to the evil, and it doesn't get you to the plan that is in operation at this moment. That individual, that's the idea of like, let's get rid of whiteness. Do you think he'll ever understand the COVID lockdown strategy? Or, see what I mean? He is lost. He cannot think clearly about this world.
Or you want to understand why there you have drag queens reading nursery rhymes to children in libraries.
Well, someone like that would look at, the vulgarity, I won't repeat the term, of that song that was played and, that comes out of the rap culture. And he would not automatically see it as destructive to him and his family and his culture, because it comes from, he thinks it comes from the black world, you see. He would have, think about his mind when it looks at the song. And how he would defend it. He wouldn't, no way he would say these people are pawns of the oligarch, that they're just they're there to destroy our people, right? He wouldn't understand.
But the lifestyle, the values, the behavior that that song is promoting is ultimately the source of so many people's problems. Of course, but then if the being degenerate means you can't even recognize that. If you could recognize that, you wouldn't be degenerate. But that's the whole thing. It's you're creating a culture, a lumpen proletariat, a society of misfits and miscreants. This is just something that was foreseen in the Berlson Jaffe memo in Planned Parenthood in 1969. And it was just more intense, with Gordon Parks and the blaxploitation films and these things. They were more marginal and weaker, so they're easy to attack. The white middle class is a bit more difficult because it's so large and more, is better organized. But the problem was it wasn't organized in a way recognized that there was a threat. I mean, they were organized in a way that they had more sound structure. And but problem is, they don't realize that there's an enemy out there, and so that's why the Kluis Goyim, or this broad white, for lack of a better term, middle class, isn't organized. In fact, it's not even it doesn't even have an identity to rally around to defend. In fact, it's being actively denied that, as something like white supremacy is being thrown around. Being accused, people being accused of being white supremacist, or we're being told that white supremacy is a problem. Of course, the paradox there is, if it is a problem, we wouldn't be hearing about it, because white supremacy would prevent us from hearing about it. There'd be a power structure to smite or swap down Beverly Je Robin DiAngelo's book. She would be getting hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Of $10,000 speaking fees at universities, if there was a white power structure. It's
Of course.
obviously it's a myth at this point. And the powers
Course, the
that be want to
psychological.
destroy. I mean, that's the whole bio-Leninism is these groups of the powerless, or the misfits, or the miscreants, these degenerates, all being organized and being promoted. They're being patronized and promoted and given a soapbox, or given power to wage war on the broad middle class, to bring about this neo-feudalistic order that they want to impose,
It's sort of interesting, Tim, because we started talking about the fake virus, and now we're talking about the fake white supremacy, and they're actually they're completely related. I mean, they're computer constructions. They don't exist in the real world. They're just devices for mental control, and because and white supremacy is surprisingly has some, has, I think it has some teeth. Hopefully it'll start to fade as more people become skeptical. For example, I think conspiracy theorist is starting to weaken. I don't think it has the automatic ability to stop someone from thinking that it used to. It's sort of, I just noticed that it's more and more people are kind of rolling their eyes when the expression is used. It's sort of, there's too much conspiracy out there to, I guess, denigrate all of it. But white supremacy, I think, is going to be very big, a very big item over the next 12 months. They'll probably characterize the resistance to the vaccine as white supremacy,
Well, they
because I think a lot of white males are going to say no.
if you know if resistance or concern over electoral fraud can be construed as white supremacy, so can vaccine hesitancy.
Sure.
Although the problem is, I think statistically, blacks are more skeptical, aren't they, than white?
Yeah.
For various reasons. But it's one of these things where, yeah, they'll I mean, it doesn't have to be any reality to it. Just like how, Asian racism against Asians is being some sort of, it's some of white supremacy is the blamed, even though the violence committed against Asians is overwhelmingly, it's blacks they're doing it, but that's a product of white supremacy, apparently. So that's, so
Well,
they can
it's
twist
unreal.
anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like Time magazine's cover, where this becomes this news story, that is just critical for culture to pay attention to. We're all interested in it. We all want to know, Elliot Page's story. I mean, this is psychic driving. This is creating, consciousness, a perverted consciousness by controlling the images that they put in front of us.
Why would
So it's,
why do you want
I
to
mean, it's.
promote these people? Why should these people be role models or archetypes or something we should be aware of, or something, or are their lifestyles or something that the person sh people should aspire to? I mean, is this something that is healthy and a healthy society. Healthy society, these people are marginalized and they are powerless and they are rendered powerless for obvious reasons because it's not healthy. It's not. It's degenerate in the literal sense, meaning that it doesn't procreate. You know, it doesn't generate
Yeah.
life. It actually kills life. So that's why we call it degenerate. It's not healthy, and it's obviously the fact that you know what they do to themselves, whether it's mutilation or what they do with chemicals and hormones. I mean, the fact that this procedure is even tolerated by a so-called medical profession is a crime. You know, much less that it's even promoted or
Yeah,
is
so
legitimate.
all of these, the elements of the cultural pollution are going to be a very high profile. I mean, they're obviously they've ratcheted it up from, well, from the Floyd George, death or murder, whatever you want to call it, till now. They've really gotten the levers of cultural Marxism into high gear, and this is obviously planned and a project, and it's part of the, we should keep our balance here because it's really part of the vaccine rollout. There, this, I mean, I think even the Biden presidency and is falling every time he tries to go on the airplane. This is just a, we're, there's gonna be lots of distractions. The whole QAnon, Trump, the Capitol siege, all this nonsense. This was an enormous distraction from what I think is the real blow that is being landed, which we discussed last week, which is getting this, operating system into our body under using the cloak of a vaccine, claiming it's a vaccine, because I am afraid that once that thing gets in you, well, there are so many possibilities. This week, I don't know if you caught Gert Vandenbosch, the virologist who was saying that. There's going to be this long-term genocide of mankind because of it, because of the vaccine, the way it's structured. And we've talked about other shows about how they would need, if they're going to go full Georgia Guidestone and, wipe out like 5 billion people, it has to have the real blow delivered, say, a year or a year and a half down the road because, you couldn't get anyone vaccinated if you had real high mortality rates right on the spot. So this is things we need to be aware of, but we can't really know, given our ability access to, technical discernment of the vaccine, what's inside it. We can know that it's malevolent, and we have to say no to the thing. I know they're putting a lot of pressure on people in the army right now. They're, isolating the. Saying you can't leave the base, no, I mean, all these different things they're doing to get people to take it. But boy, if you're in the service, just stay strong. I mean, tell them to kick you out. They can't force you to take a vaccine that was created under the Emergency Authorization Act. It's the law. So use it to your advantage. I am worried, as we know, Tim, from our past discussions, that. That long term, this thing is going to have really catastrophic effects on your health. So this is what we have to focus on. The clown world is a distraction. It's also a process. It goes to a very clear, destructive place. We have to fight it. We have to know what it is, but we can't let it, take our eye off the ball of the real evil that's being rolled out, which is the vaccine.
Okay, Joe.
Tim, another interesting week. I think we're going to be in for just one after another going forward.
Yep, we'll see. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, brother. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.